Two-man game, TMG, get the news fast, AMG, game of two boxes, name two boxes that hit as hard as this. Yeah, we're cutting to the truth, no, there ain't no narrative. Eyes up on the cup this year, hear the stadium erupt this year. For my team, TMG.
Welcome to the Two Man Game podcast. It's good to be back, and we actually have a guest. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Finally,
my name's Musa. What's good, boys? Thanks for having me, man.
It's good to have you. It's good to have you.
Pleasure, big pleasure.
It's good to have you on the podcast. You know, we always start off this podcast when we have a guest with some quick questions. Let's go. What's your specialism? Football, basketball, boxing?
Just football.
You're just a football guy.
So I dabble, but I don't really follow too tough other sports.
Okay. So let's start off with the quick round questions. Ronaldo or Messi?
Messi.
Prime Barca, we're talking Pep's Barca, or three-peat Real Madrid?
Barca, hands down. It's not even a conversation.
Pep or Klopp?
Pep
or Ferguson?
Pep.
R9 or Henry?
R9. R9 at his best, R9.
Ronaldinho or Neymar?
Dino.
It's like easy.
Ronaldinho
or Zidane?
Oh.
There you go.
So Zidane edges it.
Zidane edges it.
Let's throw Iniesta into that one.
What, Iniesta or Zidane?
Iniesta, Zidane, Ronaldinho.
If I'm being truthful, but it's Dino though. I can't put him third. He can't go third.
Hey, you're the creator of this movie.
I'm trying to deep it because Iniesta's underrated. Like, when we talk about, like, next to the greats, he's not high enough. Like, people need to put him higher. But I'll probably go Zidane, Dino, Iniesta, just. There's not much between the three of them.
Okay. KDB or Gerrard?
KDB.
So you're saying KDB is the best player to, best midfielder to play in the Prem?
He's up there. He's way up there.
Way up there?
He's way up there. I can't think of any better, really.
Yaya
is prime, fair, but Yaya's prime was maybe 2-3 seasons.
Lampard?
Nah.
Vieira?
Are we good to go?
Yeah. Yep. We're saying that KDB. You think KDB is the best to do?
One of them is up there.
Put your neck on the line.
I can't think. The thing is, deep in it, it's probably him, Gerrard. Cesc didn't quite reach that level, I don't think, of like the best ever, but he's in and around. Obviously, you've got the big names, Lampard, Vieira. Some people would put Keane, maybe. Personally, not me. I'd put Yaya closer to there than Keane. So, yeah, KDB's up there. Probably top two for sure.
Paul Scholes, don't forget him.
I think Gerrard and KDB clear him.
I think a lot of the Man United guys are products of how great Sir Alex is as well. Yeah. You know, it's like a system. Because if you think about Scholes, you think about Giggs, you think about... There's different iterations of the United team, but they were all a collective unit as they were quite powerful.
The way people talk about Scholes, the players, the ballers.
Yeah, Scholes is a baller, man. You can't deny. One of the coldest. But the impact he has is not KDB impact.
That's his game.
KDB is more of a match winner than Scholes is. Scholes is probably technically very... Yeah, technically top player. Well, technically amazing.
KDB is more of a match winner than guys like Jeremy, Nesta and Pirlo.
So this is what I'll say. Iniesta, Xavi, you know, they're wonderful players, you know, made part of a wonderful machine, you know, and they stepped up in key moments. Iniesta did step up in key moments both internationally and for his club team. Something that KDB hasn't done. KDB's never been the guy to step up for his international team.
Yeah, but on a consistent basis, if you're talking about match wins, KDB is more of a match winner. Iniesta has the highest of highs, but KDB is more of a match winner. I think only Yeah, I think he might be, in terms of stats, more of a matchman than Zidane, really. If you look at goals and assists and maybe in games, win games, probably, yeah.
With KDB, he doesn't have the big moment catalogue.
He doesn't, no.
I think that's the one thing that will keep him from being in that top conversation.
That has the left foot volley. And he has the two headers against Brazil.
Yeah,
it's like talking about Bell, like in a way, like if we talk about match winners, like yeah. Bell's always gonna say, he might not say consistently he was there, but as a match winner, he's got moments.
Mm.
It's true.
You know, you got those guys that have moments. Seeing as we got you settled, then let's get into it. Tell us a bit about your sporting journey, how you got here. You're the manager of Agenda. How does it work?
So I started coaching a year and a half ago when I joined Agenda. I'd been looking for to get into the tactical side of the game for a minute, but the clubs where I was never quite that. Just before I joined, you go to some clubs and tactics isn't a thing. Like, you turn up, they do line up 5 minutes beforehand, 4-2-3-1, let's go. And you try and go into any sort of detail and they're just looking at you like you're speaking Chinese. Do you know? So
I don't think I've ever been involved in any club that's not...
Bro, it's mad. You'd be surprised. But there's a lot of clubs where they're more social teams than competitive. Like, you get somewhere, kick about with the lads, and there's somewhere, like, at the start of the season, like, yo, we're here to win stuff. So obviously, you know Samaluko?
Yeah.
We left our old club at the same time. And then he joined Agenda straight away, and I was sort of clubless, just got married, so I was like, oh, let me chill on the football team for a little bit.
Yeah.
And he was just telling me bare about Agenda. Man was telling me, rah, they brought the tactics board. we turn up an hour before, we go through the tactics, it's like bare in detail. I was like, rah, okay, cool. Cool, say no more. And then he was like, because obviously it's like all black team.
Shout out the brothers.
Mm. Run by black guys, four black guys. Obviously, we're more diverse now, but it's basically the man them that came together and made it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That caught my attention now. Because more time, you go to these clubs, it's very laddie.
Yep.
The banter's a bit, you know, it's not really my sort of banter. The vibe isn't quite my vibe. They're going to socials in the pub in New Cross. That's not really my thing. Mm. So I'm now hearing, oh, it's the man them. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Let me come and pre it.
Our socials go for thank you or something.
Yeah, pretty much, like.
A blank canvas.
Yeah.
Hey.
So I've come through to you know your, it was Old Roan 5-4 semi-final.
Oh yeah.
Where James scored that banger.
I see to an Old
Roan
affiliate right
there.
Yeah, for real.
Oh, he plays on the
phone. Yeah. Say no more.
Can have that. We're not there no more. You can win.
But it was that one where Jerome scored the fifth one, running from the halfway.
Oh,
yeah.
Jerome took
Yoga's
boy out.
Yeah, so I've seen that. I'm like, okay, cool.
Ragdolled him, Shaq.
I've seen the vibe now. I'm like, okay, cool, this is a bit of me. So I'm chatting to Sam. I'm like, shout your manager, is there any coaching space? But Bassos was still there.
Yeah.
So obviously there was no space, but I think he just moved to Brighton Ropes at the end of the season.
Shout out
BB. Shout out Bassos. So that's when the space opened up. So I've come down for trials.
Yeah.
And then from there, we've just clicked and... It's been a love story ever since.
So you're loving doing this. You're loving this.
I enjoy it, bare. Yeah, I really enjoy this side of the game.
And what is it about this side of the game that really?
I think I've always had a interest in the tactical side.
Is it a football manager thing? Is it just?
Yeah, since about 08, because you've had Wenger, and that 08 team, even though they weren't successful, they popped ball. With Nasri, Fabregas,
Leb,
all them men, Van Persie, Adebayo, they moved the ball so well. Then off the back of that, you've had Pep come through. Then you've had Del Bosque with Spain.
Yep.
So in that 4-year period, you've just had this just bare tiki-taka team just doing bits. I've always been obsessed with that. I'm not necessarily big on the tricks and flicks. Can we get the ball down? Can we control it? So from Football Manager days, FIFA, I'll send you the man name. If you watch me play FIFA, I'm playing my life depends on the possession.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just always been my interest. So I've always known, even though I kick ball for fun, I always at some point want to get into this side of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's just always been my focus.
That's good. And in terms of tactics, do you have a go-to tactic? What's the way you want to play possession-based football, but how do you implement that? How do you make sure that you're implementing that kind of possession-based football?
Remember, like, the tactics for
the tactics what can show the people.
So I'm very much a 4-3-3 man.
Okay.
Like, that's my basic go-to.
So you're Ajax guy, you're Johan Cruyff is the...
Yeah, but if you... Like, Melo knows me. I like to tinker a lot as well.
Okay.
So I'll try stuff. There's days I've done 3 at the back. It's worked. It hasn't worked. I'm always trying to, like... find different shapes, different patterns.
And what is it about 4-3-3 that is the makes it the go-to?
You can stretch a pitch. You can get quite a lot
what
of depth.
What sort of variation of 4-3-3 would you?
One at the base. So
you have your pivot.
Your pivot, yeah. You got your two there. Naturally, push your wing backs up. Mm-hmm. You've got your pivot there.
To the camera you're done, please.
You got your two there, and then. Your wingers, for me, are always your highest players, okay. Never the striker.
So you have the striker dropping into that
striker
space?
Yeah, so that's your striker. Wingers, because effectively, they can pin the whole defence by themselves. And then that leaves him as a free man. One of the things recently I've been trying to implement, but I'm not quite there yet, is finding ways to play out when he's picked up. Because a lot of the teams we play... will either sit off completely or they'll just go manic man to man and try and like squeeze us high. So you usually find that man there is usually marked out. So it's just about finding whether it's him or, depending on who I have available on the day, my left back.
Okay.
So it's a lot of just rotations in there trying to get the ball down and play. So we're getting there, but I really think we're only at 40% of where I want to be at the moment. But that's that basic idea of how I want to play.
Okay. And then in terms of that, what are the qualities? So for a centre back, what are the qualities you're looking for a centre back? What are the qualities you're looking for your fullback? What are your qualities are you looking for?
So for me, my fullbacks have to be able to play like midfielders.
Okay.
Even if they're not necessarily in that midfield space, because you're so tight up against the line, you have to be technically good to shift the ball out. Because if it's breaking down there, it's long. Because usually they're the free man. Mm-hmm. When they're marked out, you got your wingers trying to cut that ball off there. You've got him there. You can escape through your wing back. So you really want them to be able to play football.
So they have to be very technically
skilled. Yeah. Obviously, your centre backs have to be good on the ball as well, but very athletic. Be ready to recover, because especially when we push all the way up, there's a lot of space in behind.
Yep.
So they have to be ready to trap back, go 1v1. So if you look at our centre backs, we've got Don, we've got AK, Sam Luko, Junior, Eli, Dre, all of them can do one-on-one defending. I'm very comfortable that if we throw everyone forward and you leave them one-on-one, it's 90% in favour of the defender.
Okay.
And then obviously for your pivot, you need everything. For me, that's the most important player there, because he's got to do every aspect of the game at the same time. So they've got to be your complete guy.
Yep.
And then obviously your wingers are wingers, wide men, fast, can finish, can create. Your striker, it depends what we have on the day. Okay. I don't mind a pure 9, I don't mind a false 9. I can play off either.
What's your go-to, your ideal team?
False 9. False 9, yeah.
It sounds like the pivot is the main, your main...
Yeah.
It's the main, that's the thing that makes the system work.
Yes, yeah.
So do you consider one of your 8s... also dropping in as a pivot? Do they have to have the same skills, or is it different set skill sets?
Different skill sets, because with the 8s, I like both my 8s to go.
Okay.
So obviously, sometimes I say 6, 8, 10, and it ends up like a bit of a stagger triangle. But really, like Melo will tell you, like anytime we're coaching or I'm going through tactics, both my 8s are
going. So you play your attack with 5, defend with 5, basically.
Correct, yeah. That's one of the big things I shout a lot. 5 and 5 at all times. If one goes, maybe he drops, we've still got 5 and 5.
So it's 5 on 5. You have those kind of principles. So in terms of those, that you have the 5 on 5 principles, what other principles do you have then in terms of your system?
Stretching the pitch, width is a big one. There's no reason to squeeze the pitch. But a big thing as well is the fullbacks helping out the pivot.
Okay.
Because if you've got your wingers there, your striker, I've sent both my midfielders, you can't ask one man to do that.
Yeah.
That's impossible. That's a suicide drill.
So the fullbacks need to be...
Yeah. So they need to almost position themselves halfway there and then be ready to come out and offer themselves. Or if they go, one of my midfielders be sensible. So at the very least, I've got 2. Ideally 3.
Okay. So then, in terms of that, tactically, how do you work on implementing that with the players that you have at your disposal?
In training, it's a lot of sort of possession work done, but it's possession with concept. So it might be a game where, so for example, we do a build-out drill at the end of training, for example. So it's 6 attackers versus 8 defenders, including the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
The idea is for the 8 to be able to build up and for the attackers to press the ball, win it and score. So you're working on both halves of the game in one drill. Or you might have a rondo drill where, say, you've got one group there, two men come across, win the ball, transfer it back. So it's a lot of possession within a group, counter-pressing, transition, switching over back and forth. So it really depends on what I feel like training that day.
Okay. And then, so you've got all of these things. What happens when you don't have the players that can play in the system? How do you adapt to that?
You have to be able to tinker a lot. So one of the things I've done this season, and some of the men get onto me, I play a lot of men out of position.
Okay.
So it's more about understanding, okay, cool. Not only is that your position, but what's your skill set?
Yep.
So I've played Melo at right back this season. Mm-hmm. There's players who have played 6 different positions for me. So it's just about understanding, cool, I might not have this man, but who's got the skills to do what I need to do, even if you're out of position.
So, for example, a player like Melo, he's quite technically secure because he's a midfield background.
Yeah.
He's got the ability to do that. Maybe he's obviously got the engine as well. He's played
and he can defend, yeah. So, right there, I think his man of the, his man of the match award this season actually came from right back.
Okay. Flat work!
Doing that job there.
How do you make someone, so you got a centre mid and you're telling them, you know, I want you to play right back. How do you convince someone? Because that's, you know, there's intangible stuff. How do you deal with the players? Because that's probably the mental side is also another thing you have to deal with, as well as the tactical side.
I think I have to give all the credit to the boys for that. No one really throws strops.
Okay.
If I ask a job of them more time, they might go, oh, but as soon as they're on the pitch, they're doing it. I've never really had a situation yet where I've asked someone to do something and they're getting on to me like, oh, why am I playing here? Why am I playing there? At the end of the game, I might even apologise, say, I'm sorry I had to play you there, but I really appreciate you doing the job. But generally, the boys are easy. Like, you put them out on the pitch and they'll play.
Mm-hmm.
Like, most of them, if they turn up on the Saturday, they're there to play. No wahala.
Mm-hmm.
So, in that aspect, I've not really had any issue.
What's been your biggest challenge so far? Tactically or even outside of tactics?
Training for me is a big challenge, not just because numbers are inconsistent, but we get less time than we did last year. Remember last year we started at 8 o'clock?
Oh yeah.
This year we're starting at 8:30.
yeah.
10 minutes of that hour and an hour and a half is just setting up, getting boots on, talking to people, getting them ready, and then we've probably got an hour solid of training time after the warm up. So I've got to implement all these ideas in my head in 1 hour a week.
It's not enough
time at all, which is why I feel like I'm only at maybe 40% of where I want the team to be,
because
I'm having to introduce stuff very slowly. And then within that hour, how many men do I have on the day?
Have you thought of other ways to counteract that, maybe outside of the training, outside of being on the training ground, so maybe sending some clips and stuff to explain concepts even more?
I've thought about it, but man them don't really, we're all working men. Like, I know man them aren't really going to sit down. There's a couple players that might. Like, there's players that message me on the side and they'd be like, boss, what do you need from me? Or, okay, you didn't start me this game, why didn't you start me? What is it you're looking for? I had someone message me, okay, can you describe what your midfield looks like and what you want from each position? And I voice noted them, I broke it down. The next game, I think they got a man of the match award. You get it? So I have people that come to me directly, but generally speaking, I know if I just throw it in the chat, it's not going to land with everyone, and it's not really the most effective way of doing it. Like, the man them that really want it will come and find it, but otherwise I'm just wary of just throwing it into the chat and hoping, because even when I put out match instructions on the Saturday, you know, people don't really read it. Some people do, but I'm watching like corners get set up and I can tell, okay, cool, you didn't read it straight away. So just throwing it into the chat for me isn't necessarily...
When do you throw them on the side, innit?
Yeah, Saturday morning.
It's something that I don't read it.
Yeah.
Because I come from coaching. I just don't have the time. Literally, I'll be coaching my team and obviously not doing too great this year. And then train session intense.
Yeah.
And driving. And next time I'm at the game, I just skip.
Like, everyone's got different lives, isn't it? Yeah. So
I'd say maybe try for it on a Friday.
Possibly.
It's quite difficult when you're managing guys. They're not professionals, you know.
Yeah, there's only so much I can ask of you. Like, and they already put in so much effort. Yeah. Or the man that turned up put in so much effort. So it's like, how much can I throw at you and expect you to take that in?
I'd say the suggestion that, yeah, for the stuff that you want to impact in training, you know, or the stuff you maybe don't have enough time for, maybe if you could find a quick, like, 5-minute video.
Yeah.
Just put it to the chat and be like, hey, or, you know, watch this, because most guys are watching other nonsense there. Everyone in the chat always thinks they're flipping Pep Guardiola.
Yeah.
That would help, you know. It's obviously, I'll go say to my guys that I coach that, you know, watch this. These guys explain it much better than I ever could.
Yeah.
Especially the level of detail, the diagrams and the stuff they're using, the illustrations. I always refer back to TiVo Football. Like, I got one of my boys to, Harrison's dad. Harrison to watch, and some other boys to watch. A bit about Thomas Muller.
And
his dad said that he doesn't really understand where to be enough.
Yeah.
In terms of scenarios. And so, you know, if he actually just studies Thomas Muller, he would get to grasp with that sort of stuff, attacking, moving, and player positioning for a wing or forward a lot quicker and that sort of thing. So that's what I'm really going to try and bring to his attention.
Yeah.
How do you as a coach try and improve? What do you do to make sure that you're improving? Not only your players, but how do you make sure that you're improving?
I do a lot of sort of looking up for ideas. Okay. So if you go through my phone, I've got like loads of like ebooks and videos saved, and I'm just always looking for a new idea, even if it's maybe from someone who plays a different way to me. I'm always trying to find, like, cool, can I bring something fresh to training?
Yeah.
I'll look at the match performance. Is there something missing in the instruction that I'm giving? So it's not only just criticizing and analyzing the players, but it's actually criticizing and analyzing the information and the tactics and the training that you've put on for them, and how you can improve that. So I'm always, because I don't watch a lot of TV, so I'm probably YouTubing something, I'm probably reading like an ebook or flicking through Twitter, follow a load of football pages. So I'm just always looking for a fresh way to present my ideas.
It's good to always try and improve and try, because you know it happens to some of the best coaches, like for example Mourinho, probably didn't evolve and improve.
Dinosaur.
Yeah,
you become a dinosaur.
Yeah, for real.
So now that you've got into management, when you see other teams and other managers, do you think they're playing to the same level of detail tactically as you, or do you think it's still a bit archaic in terms of the management styles that you see?
Some managers, I think, are a lot more modern now, but you still get quite a few of the old school. Like watching, who's that team? Dulwich Village.
Yeah.
All Stars. You can tell their manager wants them to play a certain way, and I can appreciate the way that they play.
Can you see that? The patterns and the way they're trying to play in terms of against your team? Like, maybe.
Yeah, 100%.
Because you've got the knowledge, you can see, okay, this is what they're trying to do. Or this is what they're trying to implement. It's not just they want it more than you.
Like, one of the first things I do, first 5 minutes of the match, what shape are they playing?
Mm.
How are they playing? How are their players, from the first goal kick, how are they setting up to press us? Mm. And then from there, you go from there. And then even, like, watching it back, because we've got the VO, so I get to watch the games back. I'm not only looking, how did we play, but how did they play against us, and what problems did they cause us?
And how do you know, in a game, when you're playing a game, how do you know what to do to adapt? Okay, this is what they're doing. How do you communicate it on the pitch? Or how are you telling someone, okay, this is what they're doing?
Sometimes, I very rarely scream at the whole team at the same time. It's probably I might pull one player across and talk to them and say, this is what I need to communicate to that, to your players. Or maybe switch someone. I might switch wings because I might need them to go outside rather than inside. So it's maybe just picking up one or two details and tweaking that rather than telling the whole team to tweak. Because the one time I've done that, it didn't go well.
Okay.
Yeah. Against Dartford Celtic.
Why didn't it go well?
I'd done a formation switch with a formation I'd never tried before.
Okay, so people weren't over.
Yeah, so the next 10 minutes were a little bit chaotic. But even watching it back, it didn't cause us too much problems. But it disrupted the team. So I had to apologise for that after the game.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, so on his case.
Yeah. But I tried to make small tweaks rather than.
But it's a learning experience, isn't
it? Yeah, big time, big time. So, like, you learn, you try some things, not everything's going to work. You just have to charge it.
And who what manager do you look up to in terms of that?
Managers.
Like... So, like I said, Pep.
Pep.
Wenger. Del Bosque. Who's more modern day? Arteta, to be fair. Mm. What he's done is amazing.
Do you feel like, okay, modern managers are very robotic in that they've made their players play a certain way. Do you give your players the license, you know, to make decisions on the pitch? Or are you saying that this is how you have to play?
I have to give them that license because we're not professionals. We don't train day in, day out. So there's only so much I can impart on them. Mm-hmm. I have to trust that they're good enough, especially in the final third. Generally, I don't really give much instruction.
Mm-hmm.
So the first two thirds, a lot of our training is, can we build out? How do we press? What's our shape like? Can we rotate the ball in midfield? What shape are we taking up in these areas? But in the final third, it's go and bring me a goal.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really do... I've done a little bit of work around the final third, but generally final third, go and be creative. Go and get me goals. I trust you guys up there. But let me at least bring you to that point.
Yeah, that's Pep's philosophy as well, actually. He says, you know, my job is to get to the final third, go for the defensive phase, or defensive third to the third. And then get to the final third. This gives them a few instructions, but, you know, for them guys to, you know, show off their own natural
ability, yeah, problem solving.
Show their own problem, solution makers, you know, break down the defense in their own kind of way. Because, you know, a big part of attacking is, you know, instinctive, off the cuff, unpredictability. If the attack becomes too predictable, like Arsenal at times, you know, you can get found out. You go really bad. You need those creative players, and that's why those guys do tend to earn the big bucks, because, you know, they have to do a job where there's no real, like, plan. They have to make up as they go along to an extent, and have to keep on, you know, keeping. Once they have to have a lot of different ideas, because once people clock their one or two go moves, they have to come up with a new go move and a new other thing to do, and add a new string to their bow. That sort of stuff. So, and obviously they have to do different stuff, like in double teams and maybe sometimes even triple teams. It's rare, but that can happen. So yeah, whereas other guys before the defensive third, that those requirements are not as needed.
I don't know if I agree with that. I think they give the attackers the base to do it, because if your midfield is leaky and that ball's not getting to your attackers safely, because if you just lump it into your strikers, it's long. Like, you have to get the ball to them safely for them to go and create.
Yeah, of course. What I'm saying is, like, they don't have... the attackers have more of a license to do their own
thing. Yeah.
And it's not the strict plans and principles per se.
Yeah.
Like, when it's the final third, okay, maybe the manager said, I want you to move the ball quickly. I want you to do lots of overlaps, underlaps, and attacking movement. But it's more off the cuff, whereas building the ball from the defenders...
It's very formulaic.
There's a formula, there's a strategy. More of a strategy where there's... the attackers can be a lot more chop and change, and different things happen. You know, and they have to have a lot of counter moves, you know, cause to counteract to what the defenders, how the defenders are trying to stop them. Like, for example, it's rare that you're gonna get triple teamed or double teamed in the defensive midfield. Apart from maybe the DM, maybe if they found out that, okay, this guy really what conducts the whole team, they may double team.
I mean, they may swarm him. Yeah.
Once when we played a friendly, when I've done the DM role, the Don Simon role, where every time I had the ball, there's like two guys on me, and I was just playing in front of the defense. I'm thinking, this is insane.
Yeah.
That sort of stuff. But yeah.
Cool. I don't know. Do you have any more questions in terms of the coaching journey, or?
I'd say aspirations, ambitions. This season and beyond.
I think I want to stay with Agenda for a couple of years. I think I'm really enjoying it. I think it's a good opportunity for me to grow and grow as the club's growing. So I definitely want to stick around for a while. After that, probably just see how far up the footballing pyramid this thing takes me.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying I'll be a Premier League manager, but at least can I make a semi-pro and beyond? Let's see how far I can go. I don't really see myself going into kids team coaching, like a more men's sort of football, so I'd want to sort of progress and see where it takes me in that area.
That makes sense. What about aspirations for this season?
Win everything. win everything. I think we got 3 cups to fight for.
I've got, my wife said I've got a family emergency, so I might have to cut it now. So
I hope everything's all
right. Yeah, I hope. But yeah, you can continue without me. I'll let you know.
Calm.
Yeah, so obviously want to win it all, as you said. That's your aspiration for this season.
Yeah.
And obviously going into next season.
Climbing through Kent as quickly as we can.
Yep.
I think really we have the ability to win the leagues like back to back, get to Division 1 and really push from there. It's just about application.
Yep.
Being there, like numbers, reliability.
Yep.
But I think we'll push on quickly. I think.
What's the age of your squad right now?
But yeah, good question. I think a lot of men are hitting 30, but this season I think I've signed a few young boys to bring the average age down.
Young blood.
But injuries are creeping on all the old men, so.
We're going old, man. Shit, my glutes. Everything.
My legs, it's all tight.
So yeah. Need to get a few young boys in.
Yeah, some runners.
Mm.
Some track stars.
But I think this season's been a good sort of learning curve for me.
Yep.
Tactically, management-wise, I'm still growing every day. I don't even think I'm at 5% yet.
Give yourself some credit, mate.
No, honestly, I think I've got a lot to learn still because I've only been managing 6 months, you get it? So.
True.
There's always more stuff you can learn, more stuff you can be exposed to. So, yeah. Just a learning journey for me.
Okay. Next thing I'll say, what do you think is your greatest strength pertaining to being a coach? And what would you say you think is area of improvement, in your opinion?
Tactically, I think, or in terms of having the ideas, tactically, I think that's my greatest strength. Like, yeah. I'm always looking for ways to improve and control the game and how to sort of really dominate a game. I think the area for improvement is... Do you know what I'd say? The area for improvement is improving players.
Yeah.
So I'm very tactics focused. I look at the whole.
Yeah.
But I think in terms of taking a player and improving them...
Yeah.
...within my system...
Yeah.
...I think that's where I can grow massively.
Is that a manager... What's that? So for me, is that a manager or a coach?
Bit of both. It depends how the manager wants to manage.
Because I feel like if you want to do it the way you want to do it, don't you think that maybe then you should try and recruit a coach that's on your wavelength that can...
I've got my AM, I've got my coach, but for me I'm very hands on. So you get like maybe a Ferguson where he might let the coaches coach and then he comes through with the tactics, whereas me, I want to impart everything, and then my coaches enhance my ideas and really help me stamp it.
That's Sir Alex Ferguson, Alex Musa. Say nothing. That's all the things. Actually, wait. The final thing. What would you say your biggest moment has been so far in the year and a half or so you've been coaching?
Biggest moment, probably the cup final win last year.
Yep.
But obviously, that's not me as a manager, that's me as a coach. That's a little bit different.
Yeah.
I don't think I've had my moment as a manager yet, but we're only 6 months in. It's a long way to go.
Toughest game so far?
What, this season?
Since you've been a coach? Or since you've been a manager?
Since I've been... probably the Equinoctial game.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Yeah, but even that one, I feel like back three on the day didn't slap.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe... I feel as though if I went 4-3-3 and had the wingers that I wanted on the day, it would have been a different scoreline.
Why did we go back three?
Because at the time I was having a lot of problems with getting people in support of the striker. So you've got really wide wingers, you've got the striker just there.
Yeah.
So it was more getting the 2-8s or the 2-10s, however you want to call it, around them. But in terms of how we were off the ball, it was a little bit disjointed. Because I did it the week before against Metrogas in the friendly.
Yeah.
And it worked fine.
Yeah.
But I think with Equinoctial, they were a bit more clever and knew how to sort of pull our press apart.
Yeah.
Once we went 4-3-3, it was a different game. But by then, it felt a bit too late. Like, we couldn't quite get the chance.
Yeah.
And then they catch us with Sucker Punch at the end.
Sucker Punch, counter-attacks. Okay, Mr. Musa, you know, gonna leap some bounds, you know. Doing really good stuff as a coach, great
much
stuff.
Much appreciated.
For sure, that's why, you know, me myself identified to come on board with what me and the boys of GGS have going on.
Yeah.
You know, helped us out massively. Especially the calmness and the patience.
Yeah.
And the way you can connect to the kids and explain stuff to them in a, you know, a good, calm manner. Mm. Even in part moments of adversity or tricky periods, get it, you know, calm them down. It's a great skill to have. Doing lots of great work.
Much appreciated.
Long may it continue. Like I said, you know, if you ever want to get into youth football, you have the, you just have the knack for it. I mean, me, obviously, I started coaching 2017, volunteering. Yeah. So I'm managing this side, the 2019, or coaching, I was assistant manager before 2019. I think I became full manager after the pandemic when we resumed end of around towards the late 2020.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, you know, it's the way I play and, you know, get onto my teammates and stuff. Obviously, it's completely different how I can be with the boys that I coach, because obviously they're kids. And so, I mean, I remember last Saturday and Sunday just gone.
Yeah.
I really wanted to just slap some kids. I really wanted to just grip some up. I'm like, yo, shake them up. I can't, I can't do that because they're kids.
But do, do you feel like...
They're just doing nonsense on a day.
Do you feel like with kids, it's harder to like be more like tactically detailed?
Of course, yeah. Because they don't... one or two may understand, but they're not developed enough and mature enough to understand that sort of stuff. So you have to scale it back and simplify. And that's why with kids, it's literally the best team will win.
Right.
You can have the best tactics, but if the gap in ability is too far, you don't read, or the physical gap is too far, you don't read.
You can't coach that gap.
You can make the game more competitive,
mm.
but the gap, you can't really coach that gap. And obviously, some boys have been playing football since they were 5, 6, 7. Some boys have been having high level changes since they're 5, 6, 7.
Mm.
Some boys have been competing in competitive environments and having high level changes since they're 5, 6, 7. Others may have had good training for a long time, but may not been in the right environment to really push them on. And some boys, they just don't get. And some boys, their maturity, they can't pick up things as quickly as others.
Yeah.
So they fall behind in that regard. So that's what can make it really tough in order to, you know, bridge that tactical gap. And obviously, or bridge the quality gap with tactics. You know, and today, this season for me has been an eye opener.
Yeah.
Because this has been our toughest season, definitely results wise. We haven't definitely not lost as many games. But development wise, it's, even though it's hard to see it right now, I think it's probably one of our best.
Because
the boys, they are learning the stuff that they have to be on point for the full game.
Yeah.
Can't switch off. You can't come in at 80%, 70%, 60%. You're playing. I get every game is a dogfight. Every game is tough. Everyone has a new, unique challenge. Everyone has unique skill sets. The one team that well, last week, the team we played 2 days ago, Sunday, physical team, you know, they beat us up and they always beat us.
Yeah.
Team we're playing this Sunday, nowhere near as physical, but technically very good, where we're all drilled and the top of the league. And like I said, prior to this pod, I wouldn't be surprised if we give them a tougher game than we gave those guys.
Yeah.
I've seen England, there's just the diversity of different styles, which obviously makes English league, the English league and Premier League the most attractive because there's so many different styles to come up against. So that is the it's annoying that you can't really get to tactics side of things. But they're getting older, so
it should start coming on now.
Obviously, the boys that I'm able to make it to next season with me, and the boys that I have from next season, they all really benefit because the level of detail I go to with tactics, they'll be able to, you know, they'll be that much older, they'll be able to take it in more and be able to exemplify it or take carry it out more, execute it even better. And obviously, next season, my team will be of ballers.
Yeah.
So I have
more flexibility to.
More flexibility. Yeah. The best team, one of the best teams on paper with my tactics and attention to detail with my colleague. You know, the ambition would be to, you know, try and win everything, really.
Yeah.
And be as competitive as possible and to try and get our top boys pushed onto the next level. That sort of stuff. Because, like, that's what I was so frustrated about Sunday. Done everything in training. You know, even on Wednesday, they didn't perform that well. But obviously, the drills and the planning that goes into it, you know,
you put a lot of time into planning.
You work on the stuff that, you know, you're going to need to do on Sunday or counteract, like being physical, headers and stuff, recovery runs, whatever. especially on Saturday as well, which is annoying because not that many people turned up. Like I said, train numbers that day was poor.
Yeah.
And on Sunday, yeah, just got taken apart. And yeah, and it's, like I said before, it's like they have at least 2-3 boys that are two punting the ball.
Oh yeah.
And technically, it's night and day, but you know, it's more, way more than that. Way more than that. But yeah, to round up, AFCON, your thoughts?
AFCON's chaotic as fuck, but yeah, I'm enjoying it. But the thing with AFCON, it's just so, it's so like back and forth. It's not like, or you get some teams. So Senegal, they're so well drilled, like they're a proper coach side.
Yeah.
But then you get someone. I look at like Nigeria, and for the players they have versus the style they play, for me it's an absolute disgrace.
Yeah.
Ghana's another one. They've got the players there, in my opinion, to dominate this competition.
Yeah.
But the way they play is a disgrace. Cameroon, not the best. But then you get maybe a Cape Verde who just pull up and do a madness.
Yeah.
So it's how AFCON works. You can't predict anything. It's not like you say, you know, with most competitions, you say, okay, cool, there'll be one or two shocks, but we expect this, this, and this guy to be there come quarterfinals. With AFCON, it's up to God.
Yeah. you don't know.
Yeah, at all.
You don't know, like. Like that's why I think AFCON have had probably more, way more surprise winners than any probably any other competition. Yeah. Definitely in Copa America or Europe, Euros. I'm not too well versed on the Asian Cups.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, you know, you've had teams like I think Zambia have won, Philippines, Egypt have won quite a few times.
Yeah.
That sort of stuff. It's really surprise packages, and obviously a lot of surprises up and down the tournament, way more than usual.
Yeah. So, it makes for a good watch though.
100%. A lot of mistakes.
Yeah.
A lot of howlers. You know, one thing I don't like about AFCON is that the players, I don't know if it's just the players, but just the people that partake in it tend to not show the same respect as they would their clubs.
Yeah, big time.
And that's disappointing, that's disheartening. But you know, you only receive what you allow, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So if you,
it's up to the federation to clean it up.
If you allow people to take the mic, if you allow people to bully, they're gonna bully you. At the end of the day, if you don't fight your ground, stand your ground, stand up, you're gonna be always feeling like this and in that sort of situation. And yeah, the people, the powers that be, the federations,
they just let whatever run.
Yeah. It's sad. It's very sad. You know, bringing the game into disrepute.
Yeah, I think as well, if Africa had better coaches as well.
Yep.
Because I don't know what the footballing education is like, but they go and get these sort of C-list European managers,
yeah,
and then it just never quite feels like,
yeah,
players or the teams are playing up to their ability. Like, you look at the golden generation of teams,
yeah,
of say a Cameroon or an Ivory Coast, even Nigeria,
yeah,
and they're never quite doing what you think. Okay, cool, this is a very, like, for me, the golden era of Ivory Coast was probably as good, if not potentially better, than the Croatia we saw make World Cup final.
So to my job, Kola Touré, Yaya Touré.
Bro, they had borders. That was a very good team.
Dumbia.
They had world star talent in it. World class talent.
I'm trying to think. Who else did they have?
They had the Touré's, Drogba,
Eboué, Sedou Dumbia. Oh, Boney? Is it Boney, the striker?
I think he came a little bit after. But just the span of the team alone, Touré, Drogba, Eboué, you can build around that.
I think Oreo came out after. So they had a really strong span, but I think a critical position like goalkeeper.
Struggling. Yeah, you don't get a lot of top AF goalkeepers.
Thinking at Croatia, they didn't necessarily have the... Obviously, Modric and Touré can say they can cancel each other out.
Mm.
Obviously, Guardiola's come out recently, but they had a lot of screening. They have a lot of screening, Mandzukic.
They've got a lot of solid players.
They have, yeah. Like, for example, if you were to do a mixed 11, the best three players or the best four players, three of the four maybe come from Ivory Coast. Like Touré, Drogba, Kolo, and obviously Modric. You could argue Modric first.
Rakitic in his prime.
He's better than those guys. Maybe he goes over Kolo, I'm not sure. But flip him. Yeah, Ivory Coast definitely have three guys in the top five or six.
Yeah.
But after that, the next so and so.
The depth
as well. Yeah. Like, yeah, they have a lot of players, Croatia, that are playing, operating at high level European clubs. Maybe not the best of the best, but they're playing in the top leagues, European football. and you know the reliable guys. And obviously they had, was it, is it, you know, what keeper? What's the name of their keeper?
I can't remember keeper.
I was going to say Handanovic, but he's a different country, I'm sure. But they had a, I think they had a solid keeper as well. So it's crazy because Croatia are a small nation in terms of population. Yeah.
But it's like Africa produces all these gems. They go Europe, they ball out, but then they come to play for their country, and it never quite hits off.
Yeah, it's sad. Very sad indeed. Yeah. Also as well, Prem. Last game week. What is long game week? Arsenal 5-0. City Newcastle 3-2. Good game. Spurs 2-2. United Brentford 3-2. Forest Bournemouth 4-0. Lost to Liverpool. Any thoughts on those results that you picked up?
None of them a big surprise. The biggest surprise for me was probably Tottenham and United drawing.
Yep.
I thought the pressure Tottenham would put on United would have been too much, but fair play to United. Arsenal needed a win desperately. So it was good to sort of get back to winning ways.
Yep.
With Arsenal, it's not all doom and gloom. Like, if you speak to anyone, you would think, like, we're about to get relegated. Like, it's not that bad, but we need a bit of refinement.
Yeah.
Because everything we do sort of in between the two boxes, for me, is brilliant.
Yeah.
But we get to one box, we can't finish.
Yeah.
In the other box, it's lapses of concentration and little mistakes that are killing us.
Yeah.
So...
if you don't dominate with boxes, you won't win as many games as you should.
Obviously, Liverpool are just the steady eddies of this season. Like, in terms of footballing, I wouldn't say like they're one of the best teams to watch, but they're not like up there. They're not like when they had Salah, Firmino, Mane. Yeah.
Liverpool just get a job done.
Yeah, they're very just professional and clinical now.
And obviously the partnership of Van Dijk and Konate has really helped.
Yeah, big time.
And Trent's playing really well. The left back Robertson, he's been injured, but whoever's fielding there,
Simicast
doing well. They bought some decent signings like Szoboszlai,
McAllister,
obviously Endo. World Cup winner, Endo, Nunez maybe just starting to find his feet. So yeah, Liverpool are in good stead.
But then with City, you're always just expecting that run.
Yeah.
Like at any point, they just got a mad run, especially with KDB back. Haaland is around the corner.
Yep.
So yeah, you're expecting them second half to really kick on.
I think with City, it's just more of a thing of after winning the treble, the start of the season potentially was always going to be tough.
You
know? And for them, it's to, you know, they're really fully focused on the business end of the season. For them, it's to really. Okay, can we get to the April, May, June, or the March, April, February, April, March, where games get really interesting, where the Champions League returns and stuff like that. So that's what I'll say on that matter. But yeah, Mr. Musa, it's been true.
Much appreciated. It's been a pleasure.
Any lasting parting shots?
Oh, nothing off head. Just praying Arsenal win the league.
Oh, that's a good question. Arsenal win the league or Agenda win the league?
What would be bigger for me?
Yeah.
Arsenal winning league.
Chai.
Bro, it's been, two decades now.
Fair enough. Well, what would you take more, Champions League or league?
Champions League.
Smart man, for me, Champions League all day.
Champions League, that's the one.
But yeah, on that note, we will call it a day. It has been a pleasure. It's your boy Mello, and in regards of J.A., your boy J.A., Mr. Musa.
Musa signing out.
So make sure you like and subscribe. Follow us on all socials. That'll be the Instagram. That'll be the Twitter. Make sure you listen to us audibly. That'll be Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We are the TMG Boys. Mr. Musa, we are out.
Peace.